Final hour fist pump time on the Fan Cam Twitch and YouTube. It's game day, and this is your home for all of it. Pre-game, play-by-play, color, Babe Laufenberg, you just heard him. Post-game, and then tomorrow morning on your home of the Cowboys, Sean Treif, RJ Choppy, and our Cowboys insider Bobby Bell. In case you missed it, myself, Chop, and Peyton picked the Cowboys to win, and the love of the star, Bobby Bell and Brian Broaddus, saying the New York Giants will win tonight. Get in your selections on the Franklin Franco Injury Attorney text line at 877-881-1053. The great Michael Silver, awesome NFL reporter, joins us at 9:20 to talk about tonight and everything else. Pepe has gathered up this cut. Thanks to Tolo Artemio, who just sent me this. Bobby, get ready to praise your boy, Dan Orlovsky, who just went off on the Dallas Cowboys offense.
Yeah, and part of this reason is I don't think there's an offense in football that sets their quarterback up to fail more than the Cowboys do with Dak Prescott. The fundamental ways to get your quarterback to play better or make it easier to play better: you run the football, the Cowboys can't. You use play action, the Cowboys don't. You use motion, the Cowboys don't. You throw screens, the Cowboys don't. They're bottom three or four in a couple of them, bottom 10 essentially in all of them. In many ways, they're saying, Dak Prescott, we want this to be as hard as possible on you. Greeny, it reminds me a little bit, I don't know if you remember, when Brady went down to Tampa initially, the way that I categorized it was, they're so reliant on high-end execution.
Mm.
It's the same with the Cowboys offense. Mm. And it's so easy for everyone to be like, this guy sucks. No, they're making it hard to execute consistently.
Brandon Dixon sent that as well, so thanks to the Tolos. NFL rank in the separate categories. Play action, they're 18th in the NFL. Motion at the snap, they're 29th. Screens, they're tied for the 25th lowest amount. Yards per rush, 29th. So all the talk, majority of the talk here on this show about the defense, those are some of the offensive numbers.
Yeah, I saw
praise
that.
Him, agree.
While I was taking my 3-minute bathroom break, coming back in here, I was looking at Twitter and I saw the clip, and I didn't listen to it, but I saw the headline of what they said, and my initial thought was, this is quintessential Orlovsky, though. Like, I don't trust anything this man says. It's like, what's counterculture?
What can I... Blaming Mike McCarthy, and your stubbornness still won't allow you to side with him.
Right, because I don't believe him. Like, I don't believe his authenticity in anything. Everything he said, we can find stuff that runs completely counter to this that I'm sure he said 6 times. And before that, we can find this take the previous 6 times. This is what he does, and he's such a...
So you don't buy anything that he's talking about here?
No, I think he is
Are these points valid?
No, some of them are valid. I just think he is a fundamental liar who has no courage of conviction in anything he does in life.
Okay, now let's just try to separate it and talk about the categories.
Yep.
What is really problematic? Play action...
Play action.
The lack of motion, screenplays, those three.
Lack of motion, I'm not that concerned with, because there are a lot of quarterbacks that just don't like motion. They don't want that. They want their players to be stagnant and stay in the spot so they know where they are, so they know where the defensive players are.
But is that just a Peyton Manning thing? Or
Rodgers was like
you've
that,
You've
heard
too. About it more.
Yeah, I mean,
okay. But otherwise, I feel like whenever we look at the top 5, 6 best offenses in the league, it usually correlates with the most motion run.
I think it probably correlates with the best quarterback. That's my guess.
Dak's play action rate last year when he played the best football of his career was 28%. 28% of his pass attempts were play action, and that was 5th in the NFL. So he is...
I think play action's a much bigger deal.
He's down near the bottom now. That play action now, is an issue to me.
How much of that is they've been down?
Play action is not... It's not determined by whether they think you're actually going to run or not.
No, it's not determined by how good your running back is. It's not good by... It doesn't matter how good your running game is. Like, you generally just don't play action when you're down.
No, because it's like we talked about the other day when reviewing the Baltimore tape. There is a play on there where Micah Parsons looks like he's just been completely fooled. And it's like, well, no, his assignment is he's got to follow Derrick Henry into the hole. And so when Lamar Jackson keeps it and runs outside, it's not like, oh my gosh, Mike was right there. Why didn't he make a play? It's like, well, it's his assignment. It's his read. There's certain things where they can't just, they may have a sense of down and distance. They're probably not going to do it, but they have to have a little hesitation just for, like, their responsibilities within the defense on that play action.
Do they consider it Do they consider a read option play action?
In terms of if you do the read option for the run and then pass it instead, yeah. I don't know how they count it typically, but Dallas doesn't use much of that.
Let's do NFL more likely from RJ Choppy.
More likely to be the quarterback of their current team in 3 years, Trevor Lawrence or Tua?
Trevor Lawrence, because of Tua's injuries. If you told me it was ability and getting it done, I would say Tua.
Yeah, Tua's been better.
Yeah, Trevor Lawrence. Yeah, because I don't know. 3 years from now, I don't know if Tua's going to be in the NFL. So,
might not.
Trevor Lawrence.
I think it's Trevor. More likely to be the coach of their current team after week 7. I'll throw McCarthy in there too.
Okay.
The main ones are Zach Taylor or Doug Peterson.
Taylor's more likely than Peterson.
To what?
To be the head coach still. I think the two easiest candidates for early season firing are McCarthy and Doug Peterson. Doug Peterson's the leader in the clubhouse to me. Things are tightening up for him really quick. He could be gone in the next couple weeks. So Peterson is the most likely one to be gone.
What do you think? I don't know how Mike Brown is with Zach Taylor.
I don't either. I think Peterson is the most likely to be gone. The Bengals' defense is their biggest issue, and that's not Zach's side of the ball. Their offense, again, they're one of the few teams. They had no punts and no turnovers in their game on Monday night, and they lost. They gave 38.
Yeah.
It's hard to do.
I'll say Peterson, and that's McCarthy included. Peterson goes right before McCarthy.
Okay.
Well, McCarthy goes if they lose tonight. This is a must-win game tonight.
More likely to be the week 1 starter next year, Michael Penix or J.J. McCarthy?
Oh, you came up with a great J.J. McCarthy Vikings topic. That's a great topic. Bobby?
Penix. Penix is more likely to be the starter.
Why?
Or no, McCarthy. Shoot.
Go ahead, explain.
I think they're both starters.
So let's say Darnold continues to play this way the rest of the year. They just drafted McCarthy, right?
Yep.
What do they do? Like, if Sam Darnold goes out there and they win 12 games and he plays basically like this the entire year, this is not a 7th-round pick. This is the 3rd overall pick or whatever, who finally figured out how to play in the NFL. Do they dare let Darnold walk? Or do they trade McCarthy? Because he would get a first. You get a first-round pick for McCarthy. He was just drafted in the first round.
Probably.
By the way, we're doing all this for Sam Darnold.
I know.
He hasn't thrown for 270 yards on the season. That's just telling you about the NFL and where we're at in terms of the lack of pass. He's thrown for 181, 208, and 265. It's 268, excuse me. We're doing all that and throwing this parade for Sam Darnold. J.J. McCarthy more likely to start next year, game 1, over Penix.
Over Penix.
Yes, because this will not continue.
And one guy's under contract, one isn't. Cousins is still under contract. Darnold won't be. So
okay. I generally agree.
Otherwise, Minnesota can be the next Atlanta and pay two guys. Just like they did Penix and Cousins.
Right.
I'll say J.J. more likely to start game 1. You?
Yeah, I will say that too. Just because, like Bobby said, Cousins under contract and I just think McCarthy's a really good player, too.
None of the combinations would surprise me, to be honest.
No. More likely to be...
Difficulty of the question.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Duh.
More likely to be a bust, Caleb Williams or Anthony Richardson?
Anthony Richardson.
Great question.
Thank you.
Both have been disappointing.
Yeah, to me, not even... I think that one's not close. Anthony Richardson's got a huge bust potential. Caleb Williams is... There's a lot of this that was... There was going to be a little bit of a curve here. Coming into the NFL. I'm not saying that...
He's getting killed, too.
Yeah, and I'm not saying Caleb's like a slam dunk going to hit. Like, there's that variable for everybody. But, I mean, Anthony Richardson has 3 interceptions, I think, this year already on throws over 20 yards. Like, deep passes down the field are not supposed to get picked off consistently. Like, he is wild, erratic, reckless. There's a lot of questions there. There's massive bust factor with him.
All right, what next one?
Well, let's all answer.
I thought
you got to answer. And I didn't answer.
I thought you did. I think it's Anthony Richardson. I think Caleb's going to be I still think Caleb could be a good player. Anthony Richardson, I mean, he was never great in college. He was all like, he's got flashes, you could see it, but he was never like tremendous.
He started like 8 games or something. It's Trey Lance like.
I'll go with Richardson too.
What coach's success is more likely to give Jerry Jones nightmares? Kellen Moore or Dan Quinn?
Dan Quinn.
Quinn.
Dan Quinn, because he's got the former players and he's the head coach.
Kellen Moore broke up with you. You let Dan Quinn go after he hung around for a little bit, like, hey, I'm seeing. And I mean, Dan Quinn's got a head coaching job right now. So there's a greater opportunity for that. If you see him revive a Washington team that has been just spiraling for 20 years, yeah, I think Quinn is the one that would hurt a lot more. Kellen Moore, I think they've put out of their head.
One's wet and one's dry.
Man, okay. Because I think I see them looking at Kellen like they looked at Jason almost.
Well, not enough. They let Mike stay.
Jason would have never walked into that office and said, I want out of here. So.
No, he wouldn't have, but like he didn't want out of there because of Jerry.
I mean, it was a lot of things, I think. Well,
he just not saying.
Look, the day after McCarthy gets fired, we're going to have a lot of fun with a lot of topics.
23 points a game for the Eagles. So I don't think they're going to be 28 a game, 30 a game in order to be that envious of Kellen because of our Jalen Hurts concerns. So the answer is Dan Quinn.
Okay. I don't know. It's tough because neither one of them were going to be the head coach this year anyway because Jerry wasn't going to get rid of Mike. I think he really wants to be. I think he wants Kellen because he wants to be get the credit for discovering somebody. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't have discovered Dan Quinn. And I think he would have seen Kellen as like, hey, I found this.
But
guy.
If he loved him that, I think we can say that he did not love Kellen as much as he loved Jason.
No, he didn't. He definitely didn't.
Yeah,
because Jason was. I mean, he hired Jason before he hired Wade.
Plus, everyone's gonna forget. With Bobby's help, that Kellen did nothing with the Chargers last year and sucked. So you can feel better about that if you're Jerry.
More likely 1-2 team to win their division. Baltimore or the Dallas Cowboys?
Baltimore.
Okay.
I mean, Dallas is...
Baltimore.
You look at the narrow margins Baltimore lost their first couple games by. The division leader is a team that... Everybody thought you were better than coming into this year. There's a lot of discussion of is Philly or Dallas better? Like that was close to begin with, and Dallas is spiraling at this point. Just compare the Saints games.
Yeah, I'm surprised you said that. I mean, I don't disagree. I think it's Baltimore too. I'm just surprised because you know they're 2 back in the division, whereas the Cowboys are just a game back.
All right. Well done. RJ Choppy cooking up a little what's more likely around the NFL here on your home of the Cowboys. Let's talk about tonight's game and what he's hearing about Mike McCarthy and everyone else. The fantastic reporter from the NFL Network, Michael Silver, joins us on Sean and RJ next. And our current guest here on the home of the Cowboys with Sean, RJ, and Bobby has basically written a book about the Dallas Cowboys kryptonite. The Why is Everything, a story of football rivalry and revolution written by 30-year insider Michael Silver. And it's basically following around and featuring Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay, Mike McDaniel, Matt LaFleur. We've talked about this type of system being the kryptonite to the Dallas Cowboys. And Michael Silver is joining us now on the D&M Leasing Hotline. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
I'm awesome. Thanks for having me, you guys.
Have you kind of thought about that as well in looking at San Fran versus Dallas and not being able to get over the hump? Have you heard that in other league circles, Michael, that this Shanahan-type system is one the Cowboys can never defeat?
Well, you know I'm old, so actually I go back to the start of this book, which is in the early 90s. I'm covering the 49ers. Mike Shanahan, who was a broken guy, arrives as the offensive coordinator, been fired by Al Davis and Dan Reeves. Steve Young is playing for Joe Montana, who's injured and not good enough for 49er fans, runs too much, can't read defenses right. Together, they get it rolling and would have won three Super Bowls, but twice they were taken down by two of the greatest teams of all time, the Jimmy Johnson Cowboys, before they finally got over the hump in 94. So, yes, the 49ers have given the Cowboys trouble. Obviously, what Matt LaFleur coached up last year with Jordan Love and the Packers was super effective, but definitely 49er fans would tell you that they're still not over those Cowboys games from the early 90s.
Michael, before we really delve into the book, I'm just curious your general thoughts on Jerry Jones, Mike McCarthy, and just the Dallas Cowboys as a whole.
Yeah, Mike McCarthy, I guess this is year four. Like, I haven't realized how long it's been. Did a great job in Green Bay. I can understand why Jerry would have wanted him. And, obviously is doing a really, really good job there getting them into the playoffs and positioning them. I don't think there's anyone outside of Dallas who, if Jerry had chosen to move on after that playoff game, would have thought, wow, this is rash. Jerry Jones is just crazy. He just fires coaches. I think people would have got it because, though the final score was sanitized, we all saw what happened. That was just a complete destruction. I don't need to make you and your listeners relive it, right? So, I've always believed Jerry for decades that this is all he cares about. He is driven to win. I think he's behaved like it in terms of aggressive pursuit of revenue, aggressive spending, and not being distracted by other businesses in a way that some owners are. And I've always, kind of stood on the table to defend that. But, I do wonder the last few years. I mean, he knows how great Sean Payton is in his mind. He could have had him. He didn't. Obviously, he, had some pretty intriguing options out there after last year, including Mike Vrabel, Bill Belichick. Clearly, everybody would point to. So, I it's Jerry's team. I'm not saying he's not trying to win. I'm just saying he's not behaving like a person who is maniacal about it. And it's easy for me to say he should pay people off and spend his money and pay off their contracts. But the Jerry I know and love wouldn't flinch at that.
Michael Silver joining us here on 105 Through the Fan. Mike, you talk about in this book, it seems to root here in Kyle Shanahan's time in Washington and how he developed McVay and LaFleur and these guys like that. You mentioned that he challenged the coaches to really think about some of these schemes and not just stay committed to a system. What were some of the examples you got through talking to people where you felt like these were instances where they really started challenging some old school norms and pushing the envelope?
Well, the most glaring example is in 2012 in Washington. So you've got this staff under Mike Shanahan that has now these five current head coaches, Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay, Mike McDaniel, Matt LaFleur, Raheem Morris over on the defensive side. And they were really presented with a problem in that RG3 was the pick and had never done anything other than running things out of the pistol, obviously very effectively at Baylor. So they did something that was pretty radical and took their entire outside zone Shanahan scheme and transported it into the pistol, which is more complicated than it sounds, and they did it quickly, and it blew the league away. They really couldn't stop that in 2012. They had this one pass play called Drift where Robert Griffin would fake the zone read handoff, turn his back, and just kind of blindly throw over to where the linebackers would be if they hadn't come up to stop the run. And it gained a third of their passing yards that year, and he was rookie of the year, and they went rolling into the playoffs. So even though it all imploded, as things tend to do under Dan Snyder amid the dysfunction, in league circles, people were like, whoa, what do they do? And, football for so long has been a culture where, coaches kind of, hey, this is how we do it. This is how Bill Walsh did it. We're going to do it this way. Why are we doing it that way? It just works. Just do what we say. And this is a much different group in that they will throw anything out for the sake of innovation. They will deconstruct. They absolutely want to know exactly why anything is being done, and they want to be able to tell that to their players too and explain it to them. So that's kind of the central through line that this group is governed by. And by the way, this group is now proliferated beyond, you've got Kevin O'Connell doing his thing in Minnesota. Obviously, you've got D'Amico Ryans and Bobby Slowick in Houston. You see Clint Kubiak, who they had those first two games where the Saints were lighting it up. So it's kind of a thing.
Michael, the old saying, the Jimmys and the Joes, not the X's and the O's. And I know in this, it talks about how it used to be about the plays and the players. Now it's the system and the players. Do you think this new breed of coaches believes that it's not the players, that it is the X's and the O's?
Not enough, right? I mean, I think if you look at Kyle Shanahan's, what is his tragic flaw that he hasn't gotten over the top? Some people would say, yeah, he just is so beholden to his scheme and of the belief that his scheme will have answers and be superior, that maybe he's not paying enough attention to that other side. I think he's gotten better. But interestingly, the book begins, in that epic Super Bowl collapse when he was the Falcons offensive coordinator in early 2017. And they're up 28-3 on the Patriots, and then it all starts to unravel. And in that pivotal moment where we all now look back and question, why didn't they just run, kick the field goal and go up 11? What's going through Kyle Shanahan's head in that moment is actually a saying that Matt Ryan used to repeat to him a lot, which is players over plays. And that was kind of Matt Ryan's way, especially when they were clashing in that first year, of telling Kyle Shanahan, like, hey, your schemes are awesome, but like in the end, players are more important. And so in that pivotal moment, Kyle Shanahan says, to himself, I think Matt Ryan's right. I'm going to Julio. And it turns out, unfortunately for him, to be his undoing. But it's a great question. It's kind of the thing that they wrestle with a lot, because they spend all week trying to, be brainiacs and come up with this stuff. And then sometimes it just comes down to, yeah, well, Christian McCaffrey ran really fast, something like that.
Michael, I know that when the Patriot way was something that was getting discussed a lot, there were always people behind the scenes who would say, that Patriot way, that's being oversold. That's not that big a deal. Almost kind of defiant about it. While you were researching this and interviewing people, did you get any of that resistance from across the league of like, you guys are way overselling what Shanahan is doing here? It's not what you think it is. And what were those kind of criticisms they would try and lob?
Well, I will oversell with the best of them, especially when I have a book out. That's my first caveat. I mean, I guess this is my, disclaimer, is that they are doing something seismic. It represents the change in the league. They are not the only people coming up with innovations, right? And I mean, sure, you've got Mike Zimmer there now, and obviously Andy Reid and Sean Payton, and people are doing, Ben Johnson in Detroit, people are doing really cool stuff, Vic Fangio, which we get into in this book. But I do think that unlike the Belichick tree, they I would say that Belichick's prodigies and imitators, to their peril, have basically operated under the premise, that some exceptions, but the basic premise seems to be, if I act like a jerk like Bill and I'm secretive, I'll win like Bill. What I think you would probably argue in retrospect, or even beforehand, as I did, it helps if you have Tom Brady and are one of the greatest coaches of all time, which Bill is. I think that's why he won so much, more than the fact that he could act like a big jerk. And so if you try to imitate the wrong part of that, getting Tom Brady's a big, that's a great start. I do think that, they were all shaped by the scars of that Washington experience. They saw Mike Shanahan, a guy they revere, and in Kyle's case, his father, not only get ingloriously fired and, amid turmoil and dysfunction, but that was it. And still isn't in the Hall of Fame, which I hope this book will make the case should be rectified. But, all of a sudden now Kyle's in Cleveland. What, you know, talk about going from one dysfunctional place to another, fought his way out of there after a year. But then even after a year in Atlanta under Dan Quinn, there was legitimate talk that he might be fired by Dan Quinn. They end up having this summit meeting with Dan Quinn, Matt LaFleur, who was the quarterback coach, Matt Ryan and Kyle Shanahan over in Southern California at the home of Tom House, the quarterback guru who Matt Ryan was working with, described in the book as kumbaya sessions or marriage counseling. And they had to really air some things out and try to get to a point where they could work together. And then in 2016, they made beautiful music together. And it's interesting because Dan Quinn, who now I think is atop the NFC East, it's not to trigger people, but there's always been this talk that Kyle Shanahan blew that Super Bowl, but Dan Quinn was the head coach and the guy who should have been greenlighting those calls. So I know a lot of offensive coordinators over the years who've been really, really aggressive and wanted to go after it, and their head coaches have been like, nah, man, we're gonna play conservative. And in fact, you can ask Brian Schottenheimer about some of his experiences recently before he came to the Cowboys, right? So that's on the head coach to be. And Dan, it's not that Dan didn't own it. It's just that America kind of decided, well, that was Kyle Shanahan's fault. I don't know if Dan Quinn jumped up and down on the table to diffuse that. And then all of a sudden, Kyle was in San Francisco and Sean McVay was in L.A. And then we get into that's where a lot of the pettiness and rivalry in this book picks up. And we have a lot of fun.
Shanahan, McVay, McDaniel, LaFleur, Raheem Morris, which one of these guys do you want to go out and have a night of fun with the most?
I can actually answer this because I have in all cases. They can all be fun. McDaniel, doesn't drink anymore because he had too much fun. But amazingly, I still might say McDaniel, probably him or Raheem, but really they're all, Sean, will party all night and remember every word somehow. Kyle, I think, is fully committed to the fun when he decides to have fun. Raheem is, just unbelievably funny. We know McDaniel's funny, right, with that dry sense of humor. Mm-hmm. But Raheem has this incredible delivery and ability to disarm people, and to the point where his personality is so good that he can kind of say brutal things to people and get away with it because he's so likable. I guarantee in that locker room, he could dress down Kirk Cousins or, tell someone they're screwing up, but in a way that makes it palatable just because of who he is. And then, LaFleur is kind of sensitive. It's funny. He's obviously gotten hardened, but in the book, there's this scene in the Redskin days where Chris Cooley, their star tight end, decides on a flight, I'm going to play a prank. So he passes out pencils and paper to every player on the plane and says, we're doing a poll. We're going to rank the assistant coaches in terms of who we like the most. And of course it's a fake poll, but he goes through all the motions. But then he announces the results and he announces that LaFleur is the second least popular assistant coach. And word is that his eyes welled up with tears. He was so bummed out that he was hated that much by his players. Wasn't actually true, but Cooley's prank definitely landed.
Michael, thank you so much for the time. Congratulations on the book. The Why Is Everything will be released nationally on Tuesday, October 1st, and it can be pre-ordered now wherever books are sold. Thank you, man. Enjoy the season.
Thanks, man. And if I haven't blocked people on social media, they can find those pre-order links all over my bio. So
are you a big blocker? Are you a big blocker?
Oh, yeah. Hey, guys, Blocktober's coming up.
So Blocktober.
All right, who is the big name that has blocked you?
Wow. There's so many. God, there's a big name who's blocked me. I wonder if Pat McAfee blocked me. We have a big, big feud going on. It started when I made fun of punters or him for being a punter. And I'm just going to own this right now because I'm on the show with you guys. I've been accused of not respecting punters. That's not true. I absolutely respect punters. I just respect them way, way, way less than the other 52 on the roster. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Michael. We appreciate it. Michael Silver on the D&M Leasing Hotline. Crosstalk with the KNC Masterpiece is next. Let's crosstalk with a KNC masterpiece here on 105.3 The Fan. Good morning, fellas. Corey, what's coming up?
Guys, Jared Sandler will join us for Buckets today from about Oakland. You know, we're going to discuss a little bit of what's going on.
Did you guys get Mike's video yesterday?
Yeah, was that just the homeless people.
I was going to say the streets of San Francisco.
25 of them, right?
The 5 miles of...
I just thought it was the streets of San Francisco.
No, it was tents. It was tents along the train track. It was 5 miles of
tents. It's hard to feel if it was tents through the video, though.
I hate you. My buddy was there last night. He said...
in the tents?
No, at Oakland.
I believe.
And he said it was like an awesome atmosphere. It's an awesome, and I've seen a couple games there. It is a great spot.
I thought it was a dump.
Oh, it's a dump, but there's not a bad, like, I didn't find there to be a bad seat. I know it's like a million miles away. I didn't really find that. My biggest issue was it's freezing at the game. Like, it's literally freezing, but he said the atmosphere was great until about like the seventh inning. Everybody got really weird and aggressive.
Because the alcohol was turned off at that point, and then they were all drunk. And they were like, we want more alcohol. We can't get it. Also, Tony Casillas joins us at 12:20 today.
Well. All right, we need your guys' help. We need you to lend us your audio ear. Tell us what you heard in RJ Choppy's commercial read right after we had a Diddy update.
Let's get you over to Platinum Chrysler Dodge Ram Jeep. It is, of course, a Stephen Gilchrist-owned store, Gilchrist Automotive, hooking you up in that brand new Chrysler Dodge Ram or Jeep, PlatinumCDRJTexas.com.
It sounds like Bobby is whispering to him or something like that.
No, Choppy just said orgy.
Okay, you heard that too.
Yeah. I did not. I definitely did not said catch orgy. That. I'm sorry.
And here's what happened too. I was in the car in the parking lot garage, and I was getting out of the car, and I heard Sean go, "Wait, what?" And I was like, "Did I hear that too?" And then Bobby played it for me, and I was like, "Oh yeah, he definitely said orgy."
I could see how you would hear that, but there's clearly
play that part Jeep, again, please.
But I could see how you would hear it. Chrysler, Dodge, Ram, or Jeep.
Okay. Jeep.
No, you're cutting it off, Peyton, because he says Jeep.
Bobby,
Platinum.
Then come in here and play that damn clip yourself.
Oh! Whoa! Whoa!
That's how I got taken.
He's going to do it.
That's how I got taken off the Michael Irvin show right there. That's how I got taken off the Michael Irvin show.
What happened?
Michael didn't like the way I did a commercial. I said, "Well, you come here and do it." It was a Sports Center update. I said, "You come here and do it yourself." And I had already won because I had already got my night show with Grego.
You got replaced by Clarence Carter.
I was like, this is about time. So I was just like, upset because I was doing 9 to noon and then coming back doing nights. I was like, I don't want to do this anymore.
Bobby's on the board right now.
So I was looking for a reason.
Hey, Bobby.
Hi, how's it going?
All right, so what are you going to do different?
I'm just going to play the actual clip. I got to find out where we're at first. I got to see where we're queued up. But yeah, I'm going to queue this up here, okay. And you're going to hear it. Because he's cutting it off at Jeep, and the whole idea was he said Jeep Platinum, and that's what caused us to kind of go, wait, what'd you say? So here it is.
Chrysler, Dodge, Ram, or Jeep, Platinum CDRJ, Texas.
Yeah. I don't think that changes that he said Jeep. I think we were wrong.
I'm not admitting I'm wrong. Okay. I'll tell you, Peyton's wrong. He doesn't know how to run audition in here. That's what I know. And he tried to turn off the pot before I came in here so that I'd get caught by that. But I caught it.
Is there a way we can do? You would know this. Can we?
That
do
usually
like
happens after our show.
Can we do the a board off or something? Like, are there?
Oh my god.
Are there like
politics
contests or like?
Ooh.
Or like button contests.
Yeah, use the hotkeys. Got to use the hotkeys. Yeah. The instant replay. The 360 in there.
Like a producer relay race. Something. You
I'm
know?
Sure there's something. You could do. Yeah, absolutely.
Come up with like five things, like a test of 3 to 5 things.
It's like, you know, produce? Yeah, you have one of them in another studio where they can't hear what's going on.
Like Family Feud.
Family Feud. And then you got to have this person, you know, do it. And then we have the other person do the same thing.
Yeah.
And then we set it up so where
him, Peyton, and Alec.
Yeah. Alec wins.
Three-way or Jeep. Kevin.
Oh my gosh.
Did you watch the Vince McMahon Netflix? I watched 5 of the 6 yesterday.
5?
Man, nothing to do. I was homesick.
Okay, what stopped you from watching the last one if you were that close to the end?
It was 10 o'clock, and I want to sleep a little bit, and then I wanted to have something to look forward to today.
Okay. I watched three of them, and I'm very conflicted in terms of...
You got a Cowboys game. What do you mean you wanted to watch something that you had to look forward to today?
Well, when I go home.
Yeah, Cowboys.
I gotta wait till
Cowboys
7 is later. 7
yeah, 30. You listen to our show and then G-Bag? That's what you do. Oh, sorry, yeah. My apologies for interrupting the wrestling.
He meant in the commercial break.
Gotcha, my apologies.
Something to watch
then. Spittle got to you already today.
Oh, my gosh.
I saw him in here.
I watched three of the episodes. I thought it was, like, if you're a diehard wrestling fan, which I'll admit I am, it was kind of boring. Because they already went over a whole bunch of stuff that you knew. But I could see if you're like a casual wrestling fan or didn't know about it, you'd be like, oh, fascinating. I just threw three episodes. I don't see how this is a hit piece at all. It is very fair.
Vince tried to buy it from Netflix because he panicked. And he was like, oh my God, you're going to expose me and show me like this. Through the first five, that is a complete overreaction from him.
Okay. Is it his part of his marketing? Hey, let's put out that this is such a hit piece. Like, you know, it's a part of his theater. He is Mr. Theater.
That's a good point.
That is an interesting point. And I guess I didn't realize either, because it's a lot more about, like, the history of the WWE since it transitioned to his company. And then I was like, oh, yeah, well, I guess Raw is going to be on Netflix. So this is probably a good introductory course for people who are like, hey, have you not been watching wrestling for a long time?
It was great nostalgia.
Yeah, that's true.
I suggest it to you if you watch back with, you know, Hitman Hart and Hogan and Ultimate Warrior. It was great nostalgia. Here's the biggest lesson that I learned, and I think you're going to be very happy to talk about this.
Okay.
I thought that the matches, like, I did not realize the improvisation of the matches while they're going on. I thought everything was scripted out, like, and I'm not triggering you. The punch that we do, the kick that we do. Yeah. I did not realize that, like, all right, we're changing within the match. You sense what the crowd is and that they're not, are they not doing practice fights beforehand, scripting out every maneuver?
So that has changed a lot over the years. Like, Hogan talks a lot about calling it in the ring, and that used to be the way it was. And, like, you always let the bad guy call the match as it went along. That's changed a lot in terms of, like, depending on who they bring in. Like, when they brought in new people, like they brought in, you know, Ronda Rousey and people like that, they would go through the match and really have it down. And a lot of people do practice their spots and stuff now, but it did used to be a lot different, except for once in a while, Macho Man. There's a really famous story at WrestleMania 3 against Ricky Steamboat. He has, like, pages and pages of that yellow legal paper, and he wrote down, like, step one, lock up, step two, continue lock up, step three, break away, like every step, and they had to go through it all. So,
but otherwise, they go in and they just know who's gonna win or lose,
and how much time you have,
and how much time you have, and then
usually you know the finish, like, usually you know, hey, just wait for this person to come out and they'll distract you, and then you'll, you know, take a bow and arrow to the back of the head and you'll be done.
So was the Quebec ripoff where The Rock spit on Vince McMahon? Was that one planned?
Ripoff.
That's where The Rock spit on him.
Oh my God.
He like Kane win or something.
You know what? I've worked with Corey long enough to be not immune, but somewhat prepared.
Sorry, not
Quebec. With this level of trolling. When he would say Rock Hot Steve Boston.
Ooh.
So I'm prepared for these
things. I'm going to defend Vince a little bit in that, though. Like, and everyone was ticked off at Vince. Brett was not giving up the belt.
Okay, so I could see how people would argue both ways. Like, and Paul Heyman is very much on Vince McMahon's side.
Guy's must listen.
Rock! Yeah, he was like, look, F him. It's your belt. Do what you want with it. And so I see both sides, because from Bret Hart's perspective, Shawn Michaels literally told him in the locker room when he was putting him over for the belt one time, he goes, hey, I appreciate it. I would not do the same thing for you. And I could see how Bret Hart would be like, I'll lose it to anybody else.
And he threw out the accusation that he was sleeping with Sable?
Sonny. Even though in real life, Shawn Michaels had been banging Sonny for about a year or so.
Yeah.
And so that's fun.
So they should have had someone in the middle. Like, Brett lose it to someone else.
Yes. Or the other thing I don't understand is he was under contract for another month. You could have got another pay-per-view out of this. Then he would have lost in America. He didn't want to lose to Shawn Michaels in Canada. So if you're team Bret Hart, I get it. He's like, I'll lose to anybody else. But if you're team WWE, F him. You don't get to decide what you do. We decided to give you the belt. We decided to take it back.
America. America.
Love it or leave it.
Anyone else going to watch it?
Yeah, I'll watch it. I'm interested enough, unless you guys make it sound like it's lame, but yeah.
That's just because, like, I've heard so much of this stuff from individual interviews on, like, podcasts and stuff. If you're a normal human who lives a regular life, you will probably be fascinated by a lot of this.
That's what I've heard.
At the end of every episode, it's like a lawsuit update.
Yes.
At the end of every episode, it's like, so-and-so settled up.
Like Unsolved Mysteries back in the day, where it's like, after this episode aired, yeah.
I always love that update from...
Oh, they got him!
Robert Stack.
Yes!
Any of you picking the Giants to win tonight in what I'm calling a must-win game for McCarthy?
I think the Cowboys are going to win by 17 to 21 points. And if they don't, tomorrow should be interesting.
I think it's going to be a lot closer than he thinks. A lot closer. Because the Giants' defense does things that now that give Dak fits. This is a different defense than he's been playing. Yeah.
Oh, Bobby, are you going to take that?
I'm going to take your lead and not get drawn off sides.
Oh, smart. There you go. Unlike the Cowboys' defense a lot of times.
Oh, yeah.
We're back tomorrow.
More offense. Somehow.
Morning. Enjoy the game tonight. The KNC Masterpiece is next on The Fan.